This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Now, recently, an announcement was made that SPM year students might be able to get their COVID-19 vaccinations very soon. So today on the show, we would like to explore the ethical considerations surrounding the issue of vaccinating young people, especially children under 18. And we'll be doing that with our guest, Dr. Azana Ahmad Kamar, consultant neonatologist from University of Malaya Medical Center. Now, I know some of you are wondering, what does a neonatologist, we're talking about a completely different age group, but Dr. Azana does have a special interest in bioethics. So she'll be weighing in on the ethical issues that we need to consider. And also, do teenagers themselves and parents have enough information about COVID-19, about the vaccination, in order to make an informed decision? We're going to be finding out from a teenager herself, Alia Lee, who is 17 years old. Now, if you have any questions for our guests today or anything that you'd like to share with us, you can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. And how are the both of you today, Dr. Azana and Alia?
Hi. Good evening. So I'm good, and it's just that I think all of us here, everywhere in the world, are wishing that this is over. But yes, actually, as we try to accept this as part of our lives, I think the important steps that we need to think about, and I think that's why I'm here.
Exactly. Yeah. And vaccination is widely acknowledged as one of the very important strategies in getting out of this. But of course, even in the fact that we have vaccinations, we're rolling them out, it's still very important to ensure that everyone understands the ins and outs of it. Now, before, and I'm going to start with Alia in a short while to ask her to introduce herself, but before we go on, you know, like I said, we are talking about the ethical issues today. In fact, in a previous show with a consultant pediatrician, Dr. Sanjay Woodhull, we covered the other aspects of COVID-19 vaccination for children. We talked about the safety issues, we talked about efficacy, we talked about side effects, the kinds of concerns, common concerns that many people, especially parents, have. So you can look up that podcast and just search for Kids get the COVID-19 vaccination. You can look for that podcast on our website. And so that, you can get all those clinical facts there. Today, we want to talk about, you know, when it comes to consent, information, and other ethical issues. Now, Alia, could I get you to introduce yourself? And of course, do share with us, are you looking forward to getting vaccinated for COVID-19?
Hi, my name is Alia Lee. I'm 17. I'm from Kuching, Sarawak. And of course, thank you so much for having me here. I'm looking forward to, you know, discussing about getting the vaccines and stuff like that. And regarding if I want to get vaccinated, yes, I do want to get vaccinated. I mean, I think it's quite obvious as to why. I am a science student myself, so knowing the benefits of the vaccines and knowing how it can impact the pandemic, it is my contribution towards ending the pandemic. So yeah, I definitely am looking forward to getting the vaccine.
And just very quickly, Alia, you are a Form 5 student. You'll be taking SPM this year, but you are doing online lessons. You have been for, I think, the most part of this whole pandemic. How has that been?
It can be stressful at times, you know, sometimes you don't feel motivated, you know, you have classes from 7, like this morning I had classes until 2 p.m. It was kind of stressful, but, you know, we gotta face it, you know, during this time, it's best that we stay at home, it's best that we try our best to fight this pandemic. So yeah, I'm willing to do what it takes to, you know, go back to the normal life.
All right. So Dr. Azana, Alia has shared that, you know, that there's sort of she's got that motivation of getting this so that she can benefit, it will benefit others around her as well. But, you know, coming back to actually protecting children from the disease itself. Now, we have read many reports, and this was covered in the previous show that I mentioned as well, that when it comes to COVID-19 in children, the risk of them actually developing severe COVID-19 is known to be rare. But so why is it still important for them to get vaccinated?
I think to answer that, I mean, we take a look at our country's present position. Now, yesterday, we had over 6,000 cases, and the total number of cases, unfortunately, is not really coming down. You know, we are really hoping that this would come down, but it's not. And then I have taken a special interest in looking at the percentage of cases that requires respiratory support. And yesterday, there were like 443 cases, almost 9% out of the active cases, which means out of 12 cases, you have at least one needing some kind of support to breathe. And that just tells her how severe the condition is, at least in our country. So when you take, let's say, vaccine in general, so in general, vaccine itself, it's got a multi-pronged purpose. It's to ensure that we do not acquire the disease, and that those surrounding us are also protected against the condition. And therefore, we have a lesser chance of acquiring this. And ultimately, we hope that we can return to some kind of a degree of normalcy of sorts. But it's not that easy. Yes, the risk of getting severe COVID-19 in children is small, lower compared to those elderly. And there was a report in the Lancet with some data of the alpha variant showing that children still remain at lower risk of mortality. And the case fatality rate for children between 13 to 17 years, it's not zero. Mm-hmm. It's still there.
Yes.
And what is frightening now is that there are increasing numbers of children with significant or severe COVID. And the MOH has also reported at least 3 deaths in children under 5. And there were deaths under 18, up to about 15 in total for the first 5 months of 2021 alone. And that is something that is extremely disturbing. And we are consistently seeing high cases of COVID in children, even in June and as we enter July. And children are also known to have long COVID. So it's not just, even though yes, but we are seeing generally more and more cases. And as I mentioned, it's also about protecting the family and the community. Now, children and teenagers, especially, they are the key people who go to school and then you go back home, you've got your grandparents, etc. They are the key members of the household. And we all remember the time when we were children. We get about 6 upper respiratory tract infections probably in a year or something like that. So it's and many evidence have demonstrated that children actually do have similar viral loads, COVID viral loads in their nasopharynx. They can spread the virus extremely as efficiently as adults, even though they remain asymptomatic. And they may even be better spreaders. And the low incidence amongst children that we see right now may actually be because they are at home. Mm-hmm. And once we put them back in school, mm-hmm. we probably might see even more severe cases. So there is some more and more evidence towards probably that we need to vaccinate children.
All right. And, the situation in Malaysia and, of course, in many other countries that have approved the COVID-19 vaccination for children, it's for children from 12 upwards. That's the approval given by the regulatory authorities. Mm. They're still studying it in children below the age of 12. That's a completely different story altogether. We know that. Mm. So we're talking about the importance of vaccinating children because they're key in potentially transmitting the disease. And of course, and it's still important to prevent the disease in children themselves. But one major concern any parent would have when you're talking about introducing something that's so new in the world and introducing it to children, no less, is safety, of course. Now, how do we put the safety issue into perspective, Dr. Azana? And especially because our Minister for Vaccinations, YBKJ, also announced that the government is being very cautious about this risk of heart inflammation in some children who have gotten the Pfizer vaccine. So how should we look at this issue of risk and safety?
Now, when you look at risk and safety, it's always how do we balance the benefits against the risks? Okay, so now let's take a look at some of the trials. Now, we are now, if let's say we were to look at the present vaccine that is approved, and if you were to see at the moment around the world, it is the BioNTech mRNA vaccine, where its use has been approved in the States and several other countries. And the USA has started inoculating children from mid-May until present. And with the initial trials and the phase three trials, meaning these were the randomized controlled trial, so they managed to show, they managed to enroll about over 2,000 adolescents between 12 to 15 years. But in that study, initially, the severe side effects were not seen. But as we start to inoculate thousands, now millions, you're likely going to see more and more adverse effects seen. And at present, with the effect regarding the heart inflammation that was mentioned, or what we call myocarditis. But that actually shows how rare it is, because you're only seeing it after you have actually inoculated millions. And so when we can say here, the general rule, I agree with you, that it is to protect from unnecessary harm. But when the harm is minuscule, we also need to tell our parents that, and for us as doctors, we need to find, to ensure that the safety nets are in place. So there are a few things that we need to do by ensuring that there are some safety nets, because we know now that there is some adverse effect, but there is a greater importance of ensuring that the children are protected.
Just very quickly, yeah. Dr. Azana, what do you mean by safety nets?
Okay, so safety nets is when people always look at risks and benefits. When you see the risk is fairly significant, that's when you say you need some measure to protect. So when you need some kind of protection measure, you need a very efficient, good policy. So when we say efficient and good policy, we need to make sure, is this the right timing? Okay. And we take a look at our teenagers at the moment. We need to balance the safety of children as they go out into the community when it is such a severe condition out there, and the safety of children being inoculated. And we can see at present, with the millions that they have started in the States, that most children who actually do have the side effects, actually they're very mild, okay? So, and the mild side effects that they do see is that it's not the type that they see in the myocarditis that they see in MISC, or the multisystem inflammatory disease in children that they see. The typical reported complaint is some chest pain, and then after that, it does become better. Mm-hmm. So in terms of that, though, let's say Malaysia, we want to do this, we need to make sure that we have guidelines in place. And that's what I mean by safety net. We need to ensure that our guidance are there, out there. And it's already, we've already educated our doctors about it. Yep. And what are the signs to look out for? We've already educated our children. And these are the things that they need. And there are some recommendations that also said that we should actually have some kind of probably a vaccine, voluntary vaccine registry to monitor, especially children, in the long term. Okay, mm-hmm. Because we know that although the side effects are minimal, it can be fairly significant. Nobody likes anything that's got to do with the heart. Mm-hmm. And for us pediatricians, we do have our concerns, but we feel that we need to balance the safety and balance the risks. And therefore, that's why I say that we need a safety net as well.
All right. Now, speaking of making sure that children are educated and have the information that they need as well, when we come back from the break, we'd like to hear from Alia as well about what kind of information she's received. Has it helped her to understand it better? What kind of concerns your parents or other family members may have had as well? But let's go for a quick break first. Today, my guests are Dr. Azana Ahmad Kamar, consultant neonatologist from University of Malaya Medical Center, as well as Alia Lee, 17-year-old Form 5 student, and we're discussing ethical considerations of vaccinating children against COVID-19. You can call us if you have any questions or any thoughts you'd like to share. 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoying. Today, I'm speaking to Dr. Azana Ahmad Kamar, consultant neonatologist from University Malaya Medical Center, as well as Alia Lee, a 17-year-old Form 5 student. We're discussing the ethical considerations and issues that we need to understand when it comes to vaccinating children. If you have anything you'd like to share with us, call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, before the break, Alia, Dr. Azana was explaining about the potential, or rather one of the main side effects that a lot of researchers and governments are studying very closely now to ensure that it's not anything more serious, which is heart inflammation. Now, when it comes to hearing about these kinds of things, first of all, were you worried about anything safety-wise when it comes to getting the vaccination? Were there things that you had heard about it?
Regarding what I've heard about, getting vaccinated, the side effects after getting vaccinated, I've heard some people say they feel more sick, they feel weaker after getting vaccinated, they had to like lie down for a few days in bed and things like that. But of course, we don't know what's true, what's false, and it quite depends on different individuals. It depends on your health as well. So it does concern me. Like, I don't know what's going to happen after I get vaccinated. Am I going to be okay? And with what Doctor mentioned earlier, there are possibilities of like further, inflammation and things like that. However, for me, I'm still very hopeful that nothing will happen because, it's kind of like I hope that nothing will happen. But if something happens, I can't really tell. And regarding my parents, so far they're okay with it. They have like little concerns, but they're not that serious. And they were actually the ones that, helped me register for getting vaccinated and so on.
And did your parents talk to you about what this vaccination actually is, what it would entail and all these kinds of issues that come around it? What kinds of conversations were they having with you?
I think so far we haven't really sat down and talked about it seriously. The only thing that we've talked about is getting registered, and that's pretty much all. So not much on that side.
Okay, all right. So the things that you've heard about, like people feeling a little bit more sick and having to rest a bit more, where did you hear all that from?
Social media. Yeah, okay. Social media platforms and, Instagram, Facebook, all those sort of things.
All right. So I guess it would have raised a bit more questions in your mind, right? It would have made you think like, oh, wow, that happened to me. I don't know how bad it will get. So were you able to raise these concerns with somebody? If not with your parents, was there anyone you could talk to about it?
I mostly raise some of these concerns like with my close friends. Like I have friends who are, you know, children to doctors. So we would, you know, briefly brainstorm and be like, have you registered? Like, did your dad say anything about this, that? So it's mostly within my friend group. Mm-hmm. And yeah, mostly with close friends.
All right. And so with everything that you're reading, and I'm sure a lot of it is some... because it's on social media, it would have been shared by other people, your friends and peers. Would you say that you've actually received enough information about all the pros and cons of it?
I wouldn't say that it's enough. I would say it's sufficient to get me convinced to get vaccinated, but still... I can't tell the difference between the different types of vaccines. Like, I know there's Pfizer, there's AstraZeneca, but I have no idea what's the difference. And of course, I would like to know more, doctor, please help me. But of course, there is information online, but it's definitely not enough.
Yeah, because there is a lot of information. And Dr. Azana, feel free to jump in here. There is actually... an abundance of information, but it doesn't necessarily mean that all of it is perhaps targeted at young people, for one, or even their parents, or appropriate for them, right?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's not easy to, how I would say, to see through the wide amount of information that you get from the World Wide Web. And quite a lot of the information, especially some of them, are false information. And these false information do not just get into the WhatsApp groups of the lay public. It also gets into the WhatsApp groups of doctors. And so therefore, even some doctors couldn't differentiate between false and true information. So I must say it is a very challenging task to do out there, to sieve through these information. And but the hardest bit is actually the different misconceptions that people get after that they have read these misinformation. They may be influenced by close friends and relatives, like what Alia mentioned just now. By the way, I wanted to congratulate you for registering first before I go on. Yeah, so yay. But the when you talk to your friends, sometimes they may fuel even more misconceptions. And that's the hardest bit. And I'd just like to maybe share a bit from the neonatologist point of view, because I talk to a few vaccine hesitant parents. And when they share, it's not just about the things that they read. After they have read all these information, their doubts regarding the ingredients become even more ingrained within them. And so what we need to do is actually to make the teenagers, the parents, realize that with vaccination, probably there are the other benefits, meaning at least we have less chances of people having the severe disease, more people not transmitting the condition to the loved ones. Okay, so those are the things that we can do.
Mm. And when it comes to vaccinations for children, who provides the consent? It is the parents, isn't it?
Okay, at the moment, yes.
At the moment.
But this is another bit that we always say, like, you can see how Alia has got her very own opinions here. And therefore, we always say that when it comes to children, it is quite important that we provide consent, we provide information not just aimed at the parents. Quite a number of parents say, okay, the ultimate decision is mine because you are my child. But this is your body as well for the teenager. And we need to actually educate these teenagers. And therefore, the ultimate consent by right ethically is a shared consent. And the process of making sure that a teenager understands or an adult, a child understands the process is called assent. Okay, the process of making and ensuring that, you know, even from young, we try to explain to children in a certain way, okay, this is why you need to go to school. We don't really just go order, okay, yes, you go, you need to go to school. But we try to explain a little bit, you need to go to school because of this. And then the this process actually helps us to identify their worries, whatever worry that they can they have, and we can support the children if need be. And it has been highly recommended that whenever we take consent from on procedures with that's regarding children, we provide some form of assent and explain the process. Now, just from a baby's point, okay, since I'm a baby doctor, you know, a baby, one of the first words that a baby learn is usually no.
No.
No. It is our own defense mechanism. Primum non nocere. First do no harm. But when we grow up, we learn to reason. The uncomfortable experience will be balanced with the benefit. Okay. And you think about, okay, this is the benefit that I should be able to obtain. I can go back to school if I were to get the vaccine. So the reasoning skills become better and as we grow up. And that's why when we talk about consent, it comes with the word cognition. We look at the cognitive skills as a child grow up and they acquire these cognitive skills at the level of reasoning.
Alia, what if there's a situation, hypothetically, what if you wanted it, but your parents wouldn't give consent, or you didn't want it, and your parents, would just force you to get the vaccination? How do you think you'd navigate a situation like that?
Well, that's pretty hard to say, but I think firstly, it depends on the children's privilege, firstly. For children who, you know, they only live with their parents, they might not have, you know, cell phones, smartphones. They have no choice but to blindly just follow their parents. But for some teenagers who might have, you know, like a social status in a sort, they can seek help from, I don't know, their teachers, you know, consultants, their friends. And it's much easier that way if there's like a lacking of information between them and their parents. But if it were me, I would definitely try to seek help from my educators. I think that's the easiest way to navigate this sort of situation.
All right. So, Dr. Azana, very quickly before we go on to our next break, that's from a young person's perspective, and it sounds really practical to me, but how would we navigate a situation like that where parent and child's wishes are contrasting?
Very tough. I mean, as in navigating through anything where there is a disagreement, actually you require some form of negotiation. And what we usually suggest is some form of agreement as by having the third person, and so usually it's the doctor who becomes the sort of the neutralizing person who tries to tell the benefits and how we can help to protect the child. Okay, like let's say the parents say, okay, you must have it and you yourself feel like you don't want to. But then we will have to explain how will try to ensure that the safety net is there and negotiate by ensuring that there is another person who can look out or be or help look out after you. Mm-hmm. And help to navigate those thoughts by ensuring that there's another person.
All right. But of course, that brings us to the possibility of making vaccinations mandatory. And that's a big question, not just for children, but even for vaccination of the entire population. That has been something that's been raised every now and then. So we'll come back and discuss, you know, what are the implications of making COVID-19 vaccinations mandatory for children. But we'll go for a quick break. First, I'm speaking to Dr. Azana Ahmad Kamar, consultant neonatologist from University Malaya Medical Center, and also Alia Lee, Form 5 student, who's been sharing her thoughts and views about possibly being able to get vaccinated for COVID-19. You can call us at 03-7733-2900 if you have anything you'd like to share, or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We'll be right back, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. My guests today, Dr. Azana Ahmad Kamar, consultant neonatologist from University Malaya Medical Center, and Alia Lee, a 17-year-old, you know, who's taken time out from her studies, preparing for her SPM exams, to share with us today. They are both discussing with me about the ethical considerations when it comes to vaccinating children, you know, what kind of information is available out there, how to help teenagers and parents better understand the issues so that they can give consent. And before the break, what we brought up was a possible scenario, and it is very possible that parent and child may disagree about getting the vaccination, and there may be a dispute there, where Dr. Azana then said a third party, a neutralizing person, such as a doctor, could help to sort of mediate, provide more information, help that decision to come to be made. So in a case like this, Dr. Azana, one might wonder, why not just make COVID-19 vaccinations compulsory, mandatory? Nobody needs to have a choice. Everyone just needs to do it. It's for the greater good. What are the discussions about something like that, Dr. Azana?
Okay, so mandating anything actually requires us to have every single bit in check. And that is by considering all ethical considerations. So if we have considered the ethical considerations, like, for example, okay, I'd like to make this mandatory, it means that you will have to ensure that your vaccine is able to reach every single population, wherever they are. And you also have to ensure that there are safety checks in place. The ones who couldn't get the vaccine because of something else that is not within their capacity shouldn't be left out. Okay, so the mandatory bit, it shouldn't be something that will make people be left out of certain things. When you make it mandatory, you must make sure that every single health policy, which should be based on safety, must be in check. And if you were to think about whether COVID-19 vaccination fits the bill for mandatory vaccine, first, in a way, yes, because it is a disease, it is a grave threat to everybody. Alternatives at the moment, it's pretty bad. It's staying at home, being a hermit for your life. Okay. And are we doing some mandate for the alternatives that we have at the moment? Yes, we are creating, we are ensuring that everybody wears a mask and everybody is being kept away. So that is actually mandatory. So the other mandate is vaccination.
Are we ready to go down that route?
So that's the question. Are we ready? So that's the most difficult question, because we need a very good policy, and we need to win trust. Okay, and we need to have enough vaccination supply to reach out to every single person, and to And to win trust, we need two ingredients. We need something. Our policy must be very transparent, and we should be accountable for every single action that we take. That is from the policymakers. So in a way, I would say mandatory vaccination, yes and no. Yes, from the point of the fact of the gravity of the situation. No, from the fact that whether we are ready, probably not yet. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Still many steps in place that need to be in place before we can say it's necessary and we are ready as well. But Alia, you know, what if... and I'm really speaking very hypothetically here, it was a situation where you were not allowed to go to school if you don't get the jab. If a school makes its own requirements, or if you're told if you don't get a jab, you can't sit for your SBM. I'm just trying to figure out how that would make a young person feel.
If it were to be me, I feel... I think I'll be okay with it. I would rather get a vaccine than, you know, go to school and, you know, continue my studies, you know, physically. Because I'm sure almost every teenager, almost every Form 5 student right now, we're hoping to get back to school as soon as possible. Because we haven't had our trials, not only SBM, our trials, our, you know, speaking, all those tests. And we need to get back to the labs. We need to get back as soon as possible. So if... getting vaccinated is a precaution to make sure that everyone is safe, then I think it's the way to go.
But, you know, Dr. Azana, Alia is able to come to that decision because she has information. And I guess there's, for her, there's some amount of trust in the system, in her parents who have helped her to come to that decision. I guess that's what you mean by trust as well, isn't it?
Yes, trust is actually, some people say, is the currency of public health policies. So if we want to ensure that the to win the population's trust, I mean, we need to put forth a trustable policy. And one of the things that, okay, so when you talk about trust, it means that we must give the point to the community that we have set forth a system that will enable you to be monitored adequately. Like for children, okay, so you're concerned about the safety, we have some form of a monitoring for adverse effects. And that's what I was talking about.
The voluntary vaccine registry?
Yes, which may be, which we may have, especially for children. And this can be even a long-term monitoring kind of registry where we can actually look for adverse effects, because we know everything is fairly new. But it's not entirely new, because the mRNA, although the mRNA vaccine is just fairly new, but we know that the research has been going on for quite a while, but still the something like this where we are rolling out to millions, billions of people is something really new, and we really need that to ensure that, you know, okay, I'm being taken care of by the healthcare workers, I'm being taken care of by the government.
All right. Now, Alia, we earlier, you gave us some insights into where you're getting information about COVID as well as about vaccinations from. So looking at the kind of information that you receive on social media, would you, or rather, would you be able to share what do you think is the most effective kind of information, what kind of media, what kind of platform, how this information could be improved so that it makes sense to you and your friends and it's easy for you to understand and easy for you to find as well?
So looking at the pros and cons of using, you know, social media as a way to, you know, share information in general, I still do feel like it's the best way when, you know, during this pandemic, because we have, you know, online classes, we're on our phones, we're on our gadgets almost 24/7. So approach-wise, I think it would be suitable to use, you know, role models or influences that might be able to encourage teenagers to partake in vaccination. And one example I can give was, you know, there was a time where everyone was, you know, rushing to register for the vaccine on the website, and the website crashed. You know, a lot of people were pissed, a lot of people were frustrated, but what happened was they brought that matter to social media. They posted it on Instagram, they posted it on Twitter, saying like, why can't I log in, etc, etc. So although it is kind of negative exposure, teenagers see this. We see people posting about it online and we get curious, like, oh, so people are registering. Are my parents registered? Can I register? And it gets you curious about these sort of things. And from there, we can start to, you know, search for information that are relevant to, you know, vaccination. And when it comes to what kind of format, I think websites and, you know, articles are the way to go, or like simple infographics. But yet again, it's easy to get, you know, false information online.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure how do we differentiate between true and false information, but probably, you know, the best way is to, you know, refer to, you know, Kementerian Kesihatan Malaysia, to refer to, you know, government sources, and, you know, to take those things seriously. But at the end of the day, you know, online is the way to go. And yeah,
for young people especially, absolutely.
Mm-hmm,
what do you think, Dr. Azana, what is the most effective way to get the right information to young people?
Actually, I do agree with what Alia has mentioned. I think online is really the way to go. No, and the right information also has got to be provided by the right people. And I think what we need is what Alia mentioned about having a role model is actually a very brilliant idea, because when you have role models, that's how teenagers think. They look at their idols and try to follow their role models. Thing is, trying to get the right information also boils down from us, the healthcare workers. I think the things such as information and everything should come from the right sources. That is from either the Ministry of Health or from the universities, and actually be able to see through the information and help to provide the right information to everybody so that they can be given the right, comprehensive and accurate information. So the expertise where the information is coming from is important, and the method would be at the moment definitely online.
All right. Can I get a final message from each of you today? Perhaps we'll start with you, Dr. Azana, just to a key takeaway about what we've been discussing today.
Okay, I think COVID-19 still, to teenagers, to children in general, it still presents a substantial risk of harm, both from the individual side as well as to the community. And although we have limited knowledge about the future at the moment, but what we know is that one of the things that we can do is actually to try and vaccinate. At least we can think about returning to normality. And how we can think about returning to normality is by making sure that we have safety nets in place as we roll out the vaccine policies.
All right. And safety nets were what you mentioned earlier, making sure that, for instance, doctors know what are the side effects to look out for. They know what to do in order to manage these issues. And of course, ensuring that community is well educated in all of these as well. Yeah. Alia, your final message?
Of course, to youth out there, I hope everyone stays hopeful in hopes that, you know, we can get back to school as soon as possible, and we can get, you know, resume our daily activities as well. And also to, you know, always stay informed.
All right. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Dr. Azana Ahmad Kamar, consultant neonatologist from University Malaya Medical Center, as well as Alia Lee, Form 5 student. She's 17 years old. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.